As we look at Father's Day, I actually always, it's a good day, but it's a really tough day because fatherhood means all sorts of things for all different people. And there are those who would like to be fathers but are not fathers. And we affirm people that are single in the life of the church. And yet, on days like this, we are able to celebrate more than just what it is to be church together, but also there's something about fathers that we can remember and celebrate, and also with that a little bit of challenge, but hopefully not too hard to you dads, all right? Because I sit in this space as well. So, and by the way, good to have Don Grimmett with us today. We were praying for you a few weeks ago. How's things up north? Great? Doing well? Good. So a little bypass. Catch up with him for an update afterwards. So as we look at Father's Day, there's a passage in the New Testament. We're jumping out of Romans for this, by the way, in case you didn't notice. It's 1 Thessalonians, where he says, "You yourselves are our witnesses, and so is God, that we were devout and honest and faultless toward all of you believers." These were young Christians that were at Thessalonica. "And you know that we treated each of you as a father treats his own children." He's talking about Paul, Timothy, and Silas. That was the team. "And we pleaded with you, encouraged you, and urged you to live your lives in a way that God would consider worthy. So he called you to share in his kingdom and glory." You know, one of the things I really appreciate about the Bible is its integrity. There's a whole bunch of stuff in there that if I were writing the Bible and that book sort of represented me, I wouldn't have put it in there. It's like when you get a consultant to come and do a report on your business and you say, listen, you don't have to put the bad stuff in there. You just sort of be fudge and just take the, only put the, well, with the Bible, you find everything in there. And there's some really messy parts in the Bible, particularly in relation to families. And in the Old Testament, where you have a lot of different families, there's not too many glowing sorts of expressions of family back there. Jacob was one of the great patriarchs of the Old Testament. But he was also someone who struggled with God his entire life. In fact, later in his life, God changed his name to Israel, which meant he struggled with God. He presents a wonderful character study on fatherhood, somebody who struggled with God and his family that went from outstanding to outrageous. In his story alone, in Jacob's family, you'll find deception, incest, rape, death in childbirth, a work for the wife scheme twice, human trafficking, an overbearing father-in-law, and do I need to go on? That's just Jacob's family. And yet Jacob in Hebrews 11 is recorded as a hero and of faith, Hebrews 11. And his sons become the 12 tribes of Israel. I mention that because there's only one perfect father, and that's God. I'm flawed. And probably if I know you well enough, you're flawed as well. So in sharing this story about fatherhood today, I want you to understand that God is a perfect father. But I can tell you this, that his kids are pretty messed up. And that's us. We live in a broken world. It's interesting, I got an email from Harvey Norman during this week, and it was a Father's Day sale, and in there they were talking about, I was interested in, because all the stereotypes of today, and I was even cautious about having a blue background for Father's Day, because for some that stereotype male and not helpful today. I was interested in what sort of things Harvey Norman would be flogging for Father's Day. So on the list of things with these nice pictures were shavers, first of all. I thought, okay, that's fair enough. That's a bit of a blokey thing for most of us. We get the idea of shavers. And then he had a whole bunch of barbecues. I thought, okay, that's a little bit stereotyped. But I get that. Then he had some Bose noise-cancelling headphones. I thought, oh, I don't need those. Robin's got those. And then it had a vinyl Yamaha turntable. And I thought, that's a blokey thing for today. Already got one of those. We like vinyl. But the thing with the advertising, but not just advertising, but advertising how it reflects culture today. How are males considered? How are they looked at? What is taking place? Because so much is changing. And that's one of the difficult things in having a Father's Day message. Because we've got stereotypical images of fatherhood that aren't always helpful. We've got people who hate their dads, people who don't know their dads, people who struggle with dadhood. That's just an urbanized fatherhood word. Peter Homan, in writing Jungian Context, Modernity and the Making of Psychology, sorry about the name, but you might want to look it up. He says, prior to the Industrial Revolution, fathers spent more time at home, often taking ownership of children's academic and religious educations. Afterward, men left the home to earn more money, casting the primary responsibility over home and children to mothers. You see, it's not just now that the role of fatherhood is changing. With the coming of the Industrial Revolution, there were lots of changes that took place within the home. And we think that fatherhood pre-modernism always looked like what it always looked like. But it didn't. It's always in a constant change. Dads today are not what they used to be. In fact, there are a whole lot more. Fathers today are no longer always the traditional married breadwinner in the family. And all you've got to do is look at the advertising. He can be a single, he can be married, he can be in a same-sex relationship, externally employed or stay at home, an adoptive or step-parent, and a more than capable caregiver to the children. In fact, just last night, I was in the kitchen cooking. Why? Because males are able to do that today. Would that be right? By the way, Robin's doing a lot of cooking for today as well. But males get to do different things. All families have changed over the years. And families today, most families look like somewhere between The Simpsons and The Modern Family, which is a US sitcom. Then you've got families with families that are present today more than what they ever were. But then you've got your FIFOs, your fly-in, fly-out fathers, not necessarily by choice, could be because of divorce or other painful circumstances. One thing is that's for sure is that the fabric of family has changed and it's more complicated. Paul here in 1 Thessalonians 2 is writing to one of his favorite church communities. Must have been a good church at Thessalonica because he doesn't talk about any of their problems. There were no huge issues at Thessalonica. In fact, what he does is he writes using a metaphor of parents. He uses the metaphor of a father, but he also uses the metaphor of a mother. In chapter 2, verse 7, he says, "We were gentle among you like a nursing mother, taking care of her own children." It's interesting that when we read this letter, one of the things I ask myself is to say, okay, the readers of this letter, what would they understand it would to mean that, and you know that we treated each of you as a father treats his own children. What did that mean in the first century? Because when you read that today, you already have implanted in your mind what you think that means to you, or what was your experience as a child growing up, or what you do as a dad. But what did it mean to the readers of this letter when Paul said, "We treated you as a father treats the children"? Chrysostom writes about this. He was in the 3rd and 4th century. He was the bishop of Constantinople in Turkey. And what he talks about is that when Paul refers to his tenderness and affection for his spiritual progeny, these young Christians, he uses the image of mother. And when he wants to dwell on coaching and advice, he uses the figure of a father. That's third century. Because in the Greco-Roman world, the mother would normally be in charge of the nurture of the child and the father in charge of the moral instruction. That's just how it was for fathers back then. We might struggle with that now, but that's just how it was. It didn't mean that the father was an autocratic oppressor. Paul was an apostle and a person with authority. But he is amongst these new Christians with the gentleness of a mother imparting his own life to spiritual children. So how does the father treat his own children in Paul's eyes and in the eyes of his readers? Well, one thing that we do know is that whatever it meant, it was modeled through lives of integrity. It was modeled through lives of integrity. In 1 Thessalonians 2 verse 10 it says, "You yourselves are our witnesses, and so is God, that we were devout and honest and faultless toward you, or toward all of you believers." So what he's saying is that you guys know, and so does God, how we behaved when we were with you. And what did that look like? He said, well, we were devout. That it's the only time this word in the original, in the Greek, appears in the New Testament. And it means to carefully fulfill the duties God gives to a person. To carefully fulfill the duties that God gives to a person. It can mean devout or holy, but it's particular in relation to relationship. When we think of duties, what do we think of? What we need to do, particularly if we're task-driven. We think of what we need to do to be devout. And part of that's true, but it's actually more about relationships. So we look at this and we ask the question, whether we're a father or not, in your being devout, how's your relationship with God? 1 Thessalonians 2, 4 says, "For we speak as messengers approved by God to the entrusted with the good news. Our purpose is to please God, not people. He alone examines the motives of our heart." You see, the trouble is if we just measure our devoutness by what we do, our hearts cannot be in what we are doing. But God looks at our heart. We can be doing okay on the outside, but he is more concerned about the relationship. And as a loving father, he wants to lead us into that relationship. So how's your relationship with God? And being Father's Day, I thought it would be okay to slip this one in. How's your relationship with your wife? Because you're modeling something to your children as a father. And we go to Ephesians 5:25. "For husbands, this means love your wives just as Christ loved the church and he gave up his life for her." So again, being devout is not this idea of duty is in relationship. So on Father's Day, let's do a check on how's my relationship with God. How's my relationship with my wife? Do I love her with this self-sacrificing love or a love that's conditional? I will love you if. How's your relationship with your wife? And secondly, how's your relationship with your children? Ephesians 6:4. "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger by the way that you treat them." I've got to be careful about this because all my three of mine are here today. And I was going to tell some stories here and get it done and give it to them so they had the right of veto of this because they're sitting there thinking, what's he going to come out with? But it's more towards me. There are times in my parenting with my children, I'm sure I provoked my children to anger. I would have frustrated. I remember days when, and Robin was really good on this, you know that the kitchen table, the tea table is such an important time for family. And there are times where I just had tough days at work. And I come home and she was working hard at creating a positive, nice environment around the tea table. But my head was just messed up with so much stuff. And I might be going out to a hot elders meeting that night and my mind's somewhere else. And I don't know if at that point I would have provoked my children to anger, but I don't think I would help the situation there. I remember one time I got into strife. We got the clowns into church at another church. And I was getting phone calls during the day, and the Presbyterians were doing well out of us because some of our older crew were pulling the pin and going to the Presbyterian church because we had clowns in church. They're good South Australians, by the way. And we had someone come to faith that day, and where she understood the atonement for the first time. And I remember sometimes I came home, because for every pastor, we always have a mistress. We really do, and the mistress is the church. And sometimes our wives pay for that, and sometimes our kids pay for that. Because we come home and our head's not always in good places. And thankfully I've got very gracious kids and a very gracious wife. But dads, how is it that we provoke our children to anger? He says there, by the way you treat them. Yeah, the interesting thing about when your children grow up, you never stop being parent, but you can sort of review the ways that you did things in your parenting, and we sit down and we talk about that. And I remember sometimes when we were, let's say, working through a behavioural correction phase. And I'd get them to go to the room. And part of the reasons why they had to wait there is because I can't teach children controlled behaviour if I'm not controlled. So I'd get myself under control and be in a healthy space so that hopefully I could model something of what I'm wanting to instill in them about behaviour and what's going on in here. And sometimes they had to wait a little while, and they said, Dad, it wasn't the punishment that we got that was the killer, it was having to wait so long. So what is it about our relationship with God, our relationship with our wives, our relationship with our children? How are we doing? You know, and your children may have left home many years ago. I think one of the sad things is when we've got families that no longer talk to each other anymore. There's brokenness. Something's taken place. And God wants there to be, for fathers to model something here about a duty towards himself and our wives and our children, that we work through that together. We'll move on. Because whatever else it meant here had this idea of devout. Also, honest refers to integrity. Notice I didn't put perfection. Is anyone perfect? And I'm not wanting to fudge or make excuses for inappropriate behavior, but the idea here of honesty refers to integrity, uprightness of character and behavior. I've got a business management book at home written by a group of researchers out of New South Wales, and they looked at a whole bunch of top companies that were doing well, and you know what was the top qualifier for management in those companies that were doing really well? It was integrity. This wasn't a churchy book at all. The top thing was integrity. And this is a tough one. It is honesty, but it's more than that. It's who we are when nobody else is looking. And I know we all slip up on that on occasions, but do we have integrity? Honest, because whatever it was for these, for Paul, Silas, and Timothy to say, we treated you as fathers, it flowed out of people who were devout, who were honest, and who had integrity, and also faultless. And again, that's the idea, to stand their critic scrutiny. In other words, if I were to go into your neighborhood and I say, tell me about Pete Willis, he lives down the road from you, what would you say? He raises his eyebrows. I'm sure they say, oh, he's not perfect. But you know, Pete's a good bloke. We like this and this and this. It's the idea of, and if you were to come into our street and say, what's that Tony Ling like down the road there? Or I was to come into your workplace. It's not that you're perfect, but there's the idea that about your character, there's not a whole bunch of cracks and flaws that are there. People aren't sitting there thinking, oh, when I think of, I'm thinking, this is the sort of person they are, in a negative framework. You see, that's the idea of faultless. So these men who were like fathers to these new Christians, they were modeling something for us to look at. The second thing here, whatever it meant for them to be fathers, meant that it was grounded in relationship. It says, we pleaded with you, we encouraged you and urged you to live your lives in a way that God would consider worthy. I really like what the message says, and I know for some of you find the message frustrating, but I just like the imagery from this. So New Living says, we pleaded with you, we encouraged you, we urged you. Eugene Peterson with the message says, holding your hand, whispering encouragement, showing you step by step how to live before God. When I say that, what sort of image comes into your mind of Father? Particularly you visual people, close your eyes. What sort of image comes into your mind, holding your hand, whispering encouragement, showing you step by step how to live well before God? In my mind, I've got a graphic on my laptop of a father walking down a bush track. Big image, a little child, hand in hand. That's the image I have. If it were a little movie clip, I'd have them walking down there. Every now and then, he stops and leans down and he's whispering in their ear and talking. And then they move on because there is a way that they are going. Step by step, how to live. It's a beautiful imagery of fatherhood. It's a wonderful imagery of what God is for us as we endeavor to live lives that are modeled through integrity, grounded in relationship. He wants to hold our hand. You know, sometimes you see a child, a father or a mother will reach down to hold a child's hand and they will pull it back in defiance. Sometimes we do that with God. And like any parent, you know what he does? He puts it back out there again. He says, come on, hold my hand. And he whispers encouragement. You know, when we see discipline in the Bible, I think we read it differently to what it was originally. Because discipline was all about relationship. It wasn't about behavior management. And I'm guilty of behavior management discipline things in our home. But you know, with God, what really upset him with behavior is when behavior impacted upon the people's relationship with God. Then discipline looked different. Because discipline was all about bringing people back into the right relationship. And so you have this imagery of fatherhood and of God whispering encouragement, holding our hand, showing you step by step in how you live. You know why that's really important today? And there's one I wanted to ground this particularly into our current setting. And I want to talk into, particularly before we finish, in relation to fathers and sons and how we show our sons or our daughters what a right relationship and intimacy is with women. Because we've got the hashtag Me Too movement today. And in reading an article in Psychology Today, it's by Leon Hoffman, thoughts about fatherhood and Father's Day in the hashtag Me Too era. I liked what he said because there are a number of issues that I would have with the Me Too thing. One is that you can be, your character is assassinated before it's ever before law. And we have a legal system that says I'm innocent until I'm proven guilty. This doesn't allow for that. But there are a couple of things that it is really good, and it shows us that girls and women of any age do not have to feel compelled to submit to men against their will. That's a positive thing. And that's something that dads can model and talk about with their boys and their girls, particularly. But there's something that boys need to know and understand today. The second thing was in relation to masculinity is not unidimensional construct which is equated with aggressive behavior. All that's saying is that because you're a male doesn't mean that you have to be aggressive. Now, for many males, that's their problem that they need to deal with. And unfortunately, one of the things that we've coming out of the hashtag MeToo movement is the depiction of males as just being aggressive and sexual monsters. Some are, and they need to be held to account. But fathers today can input in the lives of particularly our boys who are looking to us to say, what does it mean to be a bloke today? I need some help with that. Particularly males speak into that. The thing for females, for our daughters, is that they will learn how she should be treated when she grows up or looks at relationship. Why? Because she's seen how you've treated your wife. So I really like that. And a couple of questions that come out of that is how can dads raise their boys to be moral men who see sexual relationships as acts of consensual intimacy instead of something that they are owed? We need to redefine intimacy in God's eyes, not in how the world sees that. And secondly, as an act of mutual pleasure, not domination and power. They are both by Elisa Schaefer. They are really helpful. In other words, what we model in our home and in our relationship is what our relationship with God is like, our wife and our children, but also in this relationship with intimacy and the other, with mutual respect and understanding. And so dads, it's very important as role models to their boys and their girls. You demonstrate every day with millions of nuanced mannerisms what it means to be a man and how men relate to and treat the opposite gender. That's an important part of being a father. So dads, as we close out, not giving too much advice, I hope, on how to be a parent. But Paul would tell us here, I want to plead with you. I want to encourage you. I want to urge you to live your lives in a way that God would consider worthy. That's good advice for any of us. Or in Eugene Peterson's paraphrase, maybe there's a little hand that you need to be holding. Something that you're whispering, words of encouragement. Showing step by step how to live well before God. It's time to model godliness with integrity. It's time to hold some hands, whisper encouragement, and show how to live well before God. This is not the time to fudge. It's the time.